The following is a home program on the Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter number 10, text number 10, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Dasatikari, recorded on December 28th, 2010, in Melbourne, Australia.
So tonight, we're reading from Srimad Bhagavad Gita, chapter number 10, text number 10. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Bhajatang Pritti Purvakam Dadami Buddhi Yogam Tang Yenamam Upayanti Te. Translation and Purport by Srila Prabhupada. To those who are constantly devoted to serving me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. Purport. In this verse, the word buddhi yogam is very significant. We may remember that in the second chapter, the Lord, instructing Arjuna, said that he had spoken to him of many things and that he would instruct him in the way of buddhi yoga. Now, buddhi yoga is explained. Buddhi yoga is action in Krishna consciousness. That is the highest intelligence. Buddhi means intelligence, and yoga means mystic activities or mystic elevation. When one tries to go back home, back to Godhead, and takes fully to Krishna consciousness in devotional service, his action is called buddhi yoga. In other words, buddhi yoga is the process by which one gets out of the entanglement of this material world. The ultimate goal of progress is Krishna. People do not know this. Therefore, the association of devotees and a bona fide spiritual master are important. One should know that the goal is Krishna, and when the goal is assigned, then the path is slowly but progressively traversed, and the ultimate goal is achieved. When a person knows the goal of life, but is addicted to the fruits of activities, he is acting in karma yoga. When he knows that the goal is Krishna, but takes pleasure in mental speculations to understand Krishna, he is acting in jnana yoga. And when he knows the goal and seeks Krishna completely in Krishna consciousness and devotional service, he is acting in bhakti yoga or buddhi yoga, which is the complete yoga. This complete yoga is the highest perfectional stage of life. A person may have a bona fide spiritual master and may be attached to a spiritual organization, but still, if he is not intelligent enough to make progress, then Krishna from within gives instructions so that he may ultimately come to him without difficulty. The qualification is that a person always engage himself in Krishna consciousness and with love and devotion render all kinds of service. He should perform some sort of work for Krishna, and that work should be with love. If a devotee is not intelligent enough to make progress on the path of self-realization, but is sincere and devoted to the activities of devotional service, the Lord gives him a chance to make progress and ultimately attain to him. Vandeham. Shri Guru. Shri Jata Barakamala Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupa Sagrajata Sahagana Raghunatanvita Tam Sajiva Sadaita Zavaduta Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Deva Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha. So, isn't it a fact that many times we're bewildered what to do in a particular situation? What do you say? Isn't it a fact sometimes we're bewildered what to do? Or do you always know exactly what to do perfectly in every situation? We're bewildered sometimes. So this verse is a very great blessing for us in our bewildered state, how to never be bewildered. If we can understand and implement this instruction, then we'll never be bewildered in any circumstance. This verse is telling us that Krishna is within, and if we are in a mood of bhakti, pure bhaktis, we have no ulterior motives, we simply want to please Krishna, then Krishna from within will guide us what to do, what to say, what to think, how to act. Only this one requirement is there. Only one thing is required. Simply we have to become sincere about pleasing Krishna. Did you know that we have a duty to please Krishna? You know why we have a duty to please Krishna? Because Krishna is our provider. Is this for questions? Yeah, any questions, please write them down. This is very good. As questions come, immediately write them down. You can pass them forward at the end and we'll answer them. Please write down questions. So, why is it that we have a duty to please Krishna? This has to be understood. If we simply take Krishna consciousness as some sort of blind faith religion, then we will not be able to progress properly along this pathway. We have to understand this process scientifically. This is a very important thing. We must scientifically understand why we have to please Krishna. The reason we have to please Krishna is the provider of everything. Nityo nityanam chaitanas chaitananam yo vidadati eko bahunam yo vidadati kaman. There is one supreme conscious eternal being among the plural conscious eternal beings. The differences between that one and that many is that one, eko bahunam, yovidadati kaman. He is supplying all the necessities of the plural living entities. So Krishna is giving everything. It's like now, is anybody in this room not breathing? We are all breathing. We take it for granted, don't we? If you were dying for lack of air and all of a sudden you got some air to breathe, wouldn't you be thankful? Well, we should be very thankful that we can just breathe right now, actually. And that air is all provided by Krishna. We breathe, you see. The water, the air, the proper temperature, the food, everything we need, our income, our money, our house, everything we need to be properly situated, it is all given by God. It's not the Australian government is providing the air and the water and the sunshine. You see? It's all given by God. Therefore, we have some indebtedness to the Lord. You see? Anad bhavanti bhutani parjanyo na sambhavaha jagat bhaviti parajanyo yagya karma samudbhavaha. Bhagavad Gita, chapter 3, text 14. All living bodies subsist on food grains which are produced from rains. Rains are produced by the performance of yagya, sacrifice, and yagya is born of prescribed duties. So we have a duty to perform yagya. Yagya means to sacrifice for the Supreme Lord, the pleasure of the Supreme Lord. That sacrifice actually brings the rains, which brings the grains, which maintain us. So, why is there so much difficulty with food shortage right now on this planet? Why is there so much problem with rain shortage? It's like you, in Australia for many years, is the drought still going on? Has it been alleviated a little bit right now? Alleviated? Or still going on? It's been alleviated. Yeah. So, that shortage of water comes when we don't perform yagya. And we don't chant the... Of course, in this age, the yagya is the congregational chanting of the holy names. So we have to understand that we're indebted to that person who lovingly giving us all of our necessities of life. And if we don't reciprocate with him, we're just like a... There's a word in English called an ingrate. That person is an ingrate. That means an ungrateful rascal who doesn't reciprocate. He just takes, takes, takes. He does never gives anything in return. So we're living in a society of ingrates. They take everything from God and then they deny God. Just like this rascal, the scientist, Dr. Stephen Hawking. He says, this universe comes out of absolutely nothing. He gives no credit to God. He says, this universe comes out of absolutely nothing. And then when this person is celebrated as the greatest thinker on the planet today, he wrote one book, 10 million copies were sold. This is how popular he is. And he says the universe comes out of absolutely nothing. And we wonder why there's so much problems in the world. Why there's so much immorality, why the nature is out of balance. I can tell you it is simply due to godlessness. The moral principles are going down. The economy is going through so many difficulties. There's a shortage of rain or too much rain. There's so many imbalances. It is all simply due to godlessness. Because we are not reciprocating with the Lord. We are not doing our duty to glorify Him, to serve Him, to please Him, to think of Him, to speak of Him, to remember Him, to pray to Him, to bow down to Him, etc. So, this is the root cause of all our problems. psychological problems that people have, sociological problems that the society has. All of these problems are simply due to a lack of God consciousness. Instead of reciprocating with that love which God is giving us at every minute, we want to deny His existence. Or if we acknowledge His existence, we want to take from Him, you see. Just like that song, you see. Give me a Cadillac, a brand new Cadillac, replete with Michelin tires. Give my wife a new silk sari. Give my kids a Harvard education. Give me a house by the sea. Om Jaya Jagadish Hari. You see? You understand the point? I'm not picking on the Hindus, okay? Because the Christians do it, the Muslims do it, everyone goes to church, synagogue, temple, mosque, they say, give me. You see? How many people go and they say, my dear Lord, I've come to surrender to you. I'm willing to do anything you want me to do. I'll accept anything you want me to accept. I'll reject anything you want me to reject. I've simply come to bow down, completely surrender myself unto you. How many people go to the church, synagogue, temple, mosque, and pray like that? I guarantee you it's very, very rare. 99.9999% are begging this. It's like we had our preaching center near the UNIS. Remember that? Near Austin, right near the campus? We had our preaching center. And only once a year we had a big turnout, and that was right when the semester began. They all came to beg mercy that they could make good grades. You see? They came to pray for good grades. That's once a year. They came in the beginning of the fall semester. Remember the huge turnout at the beginning? Twice a year, okay. Beginning of the spring semester. Or during finals? Oh, during final exams, yeah. Big turnout. But that doesn't... You may beg God to make a good grade in your exam. You may make a good grade. But does that make you happy? Does it really make you happy? No, it doesn't. Because you're supposed to approach the Lord in a mood of service, but you're approaching Him in the mood that, my dear Lord, you serve me. You may get your good grade, but you won't get happiness, I guarantee you. Because you're maintaining a miserly attitude when you approach God. If you want genuine happiness, you have to get up the miserly attitude in the mood of serving. My dear Lord, I want to serve you. This is the essence of the Bible, actually. In the New Testament, Lord Jesus prays, Father, thy will, not my will, be done. In other words, I want to do what you want me to do, not what I want to do. So this, if one develops this mood of selfless service to the Supreme Lord, then the beauty is the Lord will personally reciprocate with you. We just had a wonderful retreat in Govinda Valley, which is in Otford, just outside of Sydney. Maybe, how many of you are on Thought for the Day? My e-newsletter. One? Well, it's not, yeah. Oh, two? Okay. Yeah, well, we had a wonderful seminar there, a retreat on the steps of bhakti from Shraddha all the way to Prema. And we studied how once you get to the higher levels, then you will actually have God or Krishna will personally reciprocate you. There will be a constant, direct, personal exchange between the devotee and Krishna at every minute. It's like I can sit in a room and talk with you. You can ask me questions. We can have a conversation. You can do it. Just like we can have a personal exchange one-on-one with each other. Once you achieve the higher levels of bhava and prema, then you actually have that direct personal contact with God at every minute. So to get there, we have to go through some prior stages. The first thing is you have to have faith in the process. The next thing is you have to associate with devotees. The next thing is you have to be initiated. That's called bhajana kriya. And then the real tough one is called anartha nivritti. That's when you have to work to get the dirt out of your heart. The selfishness, the greed, the lust, the anger, the madness, the illusion, and the envy. That's the real uphill struggle, you see. Once you get over anartha nivritti, then it's a downhill glide from there on. Once you get past that stage of getting all the selfishness out of your heart, then you become a very fixed up devotee. You relish the sweet nectar of Krishna consciousness at every minute. You become so attached to the Lord that Krishna actually reveals to you your eternal relationship with Him. And then there's hardly any interruptions. Your Krishna consciousness is practically uninterrupted by this point. There's practically no disturbance anymore, maybe little teeny tinge of disturbance. And finally you get all the way to Krishna Prema and there's absolute perfection. There's no disturbance whatsoever in your Krishna consciousness. So the key is we have to give up our bad habits. We have to give up that dirt, those things which are polluting the heart. We have to give up illicit sex life. We have to give up meat eating. We have to give up intoxication. We have to give up gambling. We need to regularly chant the holy names of the Lord. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Regularly we must chant, every day. One must take up this process of chanting on the japa beads every day, following these principles, offering your food to the Lord before eating. In this way, by doing that which pleases the Lord, these practices that we do in the Krishna consciousness movement are simply what Krishna is saying in the Gita. Prabhupada did not pull something out of the air. He's simply taking the principles stated in the Gita and he's engaging us in doing exactly what Krishna says we should do. That's all it is. Krishna consciousness is simply Bhagavad Gita in practice. That's all it is. Instead of keeping it as some fancy philosophy, you bring it down to earth. And it's something you live every minute from the moment you wake up to the moment you go to bed at night. You live in the Bhagavad Gita. So in this way, by connecting with these teachings, by embracing these instructions of Krishna wholeheartedly, then the Lord reciprocates. Ye yata mang prapadyante tangstataiva bhajamyaham mabhavartmanuvartante manusha partasarvashaham. All of them, as they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. Everyone follows my path, O Sanaprita, in all respects, O Sanaprita. So, do you want to have reciprocation from Krishna? It's not difficult. All you have to do is bow down to Krishna. All you have to do is become the devotee of Krishna. All you have to do is worship Krishna. All you have to do is offer your obeisances to Krishna. Man manava mad bhakto majaji mang namaskuru. Mam me vaishashayuk vaivang atmanang matparayanaha. All you have to do is engage in these four activities. Think of Krishna, become the devotee of Krishna, worship Krishna, and offer your obeisances to Krishna. If you will do these things as much as possible every day, Krishna will see your devotion and he will appreciate it and he will reciprocate with you. If you show a sincere desire to become absorbed in Krishna consciousness, he will help you arrange all of your material circumstances in such a way that it makes it easier and easier to be Krishna conscious. So all you really have to do is focus on becoming Krishna conscious and everything else will come along with it. This is confirmed in the Bible also. It says, seek ye first the kingdom of God, and then all other things shall be added unto you. So Krishna consciousness is not really difficult. It's not difficult at all. When I first had the good fortune of being in the presence of Srila Prabhupada, he was giving a wonderful lecture. This was the Ratha Yatra Festival in San Francisco back in 1971. And his divine grace so wonderfully explained Krishna consciousness, how easy it is. He said, every one of you of drinking water. Once, twice, thrice, more than that every day. He said, if every time you drink water, you remember that Krishna is the taste of the water, then immediately you become Krishna conscious. That reminds me. He said to become Krishna conscious is not a difficult job. It simply requires practice. So is it difficult to drink water? No, it's very easy. Is it difficult to remember Krishna as the taste of the water when you drink water? No. All you have to do is do it. That's all you have to do, do it. If you'll do that, if you're willing to do that, remember Krishna is the taste of the water. Every time you drink water, then your Krishna consciousness has begun right then. Your pathway back to God has already begun. Just by remembering Krishna when you drink water, that's all you have to do. And then that will lead progressively, step by step, into deeper and deeper levels of Krishna consciousness. That one little simple thing. Every time you drink water, remember Krishna is the taste of the water. So Krishna consciousness is a very simple thing. All we have to do is seriously practice it. We have to have a sincere desire to awaken our Krishna consciousness. And if we do that, Krishna gives all facility. He gives all facility. Make it easy for us to do them. So are there any questions? You can pass them forward. First question. We had snan yatra and zandi, yatra the abhishek. Why does Lord Jagannath wear a Ganesh mask? Well, I don't know about the Ganesh mask, but Lord Jagannath somehow or other always catches cold after this nanyantra. Maybe some devotees forget and they leave the window open during the bathing ceremony. There's a cold draft. I don't know what it is. Somehow or other, he always gets sick after snanyantra. It's practically like a leela, you know. It happens every time, every year. I don't know what it is, but he gets sick. Maybe he enjoys all that special love and devotion he gets when he gets sick. So he gets, somehow he catches cold every snanyantra. And then he has to go up in the special sick room upstairs of the temple and get special care from devotees. It's actually a pastime of Lord Jagannath to get to catch a cold after snan yantra. So apparently maybe the Ganesh mask is something he wears to get well. I'm not sure what is a Ganesh mask anyway. I don't know what is a Ganesh mask. Any more questions then? What's he saying? What's he saying?
He says, can he say verbally? Because he has just put down the points.
Yeah, say it. Yeah. Sure.
Just then you mentioned that, you know, every time you go to temple, you ask, all you do is you keep asking.
Right.
You don't have that give and take relationship.
Yeah.
Well, I think, you know, if all of us agree that we are children of Lord Krishna or of God, I'll just say God.
Okay, God. All right.
Then every time my child comes and asks me something, I don't expect anything in return. You know, I don't expect anything in return. I just say, till the time she makes a good use of that privilege that she has, and I be satisfied with what I've given her, and know for a fact that she's used it for a good use, and she hasn't used it to, you know, it could be money, or it could be a toy, it could be a car, it could be anything that she may want, and I give it to her till the time I know she's used it in the right direction. I'm happy to give it to her. So if I'm the child of Lord Krishna,
yeah,
why is it important to have this give and take relationship? Because he ultimately he's the father of all. Like,
yeah. Why does he want your loving service? Is that your question?
Yeah, yes, exactly.
Okay.
Why does
he want your loving service?
Yes.
Yeah. He wants your loving service, not that he needs it. He has servants in the spiritual world who are serving him. He's unlimitedly satisfied already by the service he's getting there. But he wants you to serve him for your sake. You need to serve him, because without serving him, you cannot be satisfied. That's why he wants your service. You require it. He doesn't require it. He asks us to offer our food to him, but Radharani is cooking much better than any of us could ever cook for him. He doesn't need our preparation. But for our sake, he wants us to offer our food to him so that we can become free of those things which bind us in karma chakra. That's why. Is that clear?
Yep.
All right. Questions more? All right. How do we make progress? How do we measure progress in devotional service? By how much you are disinterested in material sense enjoyment. That's how you measure it. What's the best way to develop servitude to Krishna for people who are already chanting for quite some years and who aren't asking Krishna for anything? Well, you should be asking Krishna for something. You should be asking him for pure bhakti. If you're chanting and you're not asking for anything, that means you're chanting mechanically. Chanting means begging Krishna. Is this your question? Chanting means begging Krishna for pure devotional service. If you're chanting and you're not asking for anything, and you're not developing the service mood, that means you're not begging for service, begging for pure bhakti. So what you have to do is, that's the meaning of Hare Krishna mantra. My dear Lord and energy of the Lord, please bless me with pure devotional service. So that's the key. You should ask for something. You should be begging for pure devotional service, intensely begging for pure devotional service. Who's this?
My husband.
Husband. Is he here tonight?
He thinks that just chanting at home and following the four ranks is good enough now. Later he'll do this. Even though he reads it. How do you preach to somebody like that?
Well, you have to be a living example. That's the best thing. You have to be a living example of someone who's completely submitted to Krishna. And if there's difficulty, he's chanting, but he's reached a certain plateau and he can't get any higher, you should be begging Krishna to help you, to help him. Because Krishna's in his heart as a super soul. And you just have to beg Krishna to help you, to help him. Does he want to become a pure devotee?
That's what he says he wants to do someday.
He wants to.
Someday.
Well, to ask him, remind him that death is, can come in any minute. So why someday? Why not today?
Yeah, why not?
Why? Actually, we have to think about becoming completely pure in heart right now, because death is hanging over our head at every minute, and any minute it can drop down and snatch us away. Death is hanging over everyone's head in this material world. And this is ready at any minute to grab us away from this body. So we have to be prepared. We have to become pure. You have to remind them that someday doesn't make any sense. Today makes sense, but not someday. But you may not live for 5 minutes, sir.
I keep telling him that. I said, there's an accident as we pass the road every time we pass it.
Tell him there's nothing wrong with working hard. Arjuna worked very hard on the battlefield of Kurukshetra.
What do you do about people who are money minded?
There's nothing wrong with money. If Prabhupada said a Krishna conscious businessman, he can aspire to become the wealthiest businessman in the whole world. If somebody likes to make money, then let him make millions of dollars and build temples and do all kinds of wonderful things to spread Krishna consciousness. We have no objection if somebody wants to become rich. Let him become a multi-billionaire. He can give huge support to spread this movement all over the world. We have no objection. But he has to have good sadhana. Before he goes out and makes his $1 million every day, he should chant 16 good rounds. We have no objection. If you all became millionaires, we wouldn't mind. We could build temples everywhere, all over the world, a temple in every village, a big, huge, opulent temple in every village. If you all become billionaires, we have no objection. We have no objection. We can use that. It's a nice service. If one becomes wealthy and spends that money for spreading Krishna consciousness. But don't be a miser. Now this is my money. I worked hard and I earned it. No. It is all by God's grace. Every penny that we have is all by the grace of God. Therefore, every penny must be spent in a way that is pleasing to the Lord, not for sense gratification. That's the key. Okay? Good luck with that. All blessings. All blessings. Okay, knowing the fact of Krishna consciousness, but still could not reach the level of perfection of Krishna consciousness, what should we do to each day to give up our wrong things? Yeah. Well, giving up wrong things is difficult. But if you start accepting more right things, then there's no room for the wrong thing. Start accepting more and more right things, and then the wrong things will be squeezed out automatically. To reach the level of perfection of Krishna consciousness, you need to have a spiritual master. That's one thing. I don't know who asked the question, but you have to have a spirit. Okay, you have to have, you're initiated yet? Not yet. You have to have a spiritual master. That's essential. Because Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, the Adi Purana, he tells Arjuna, Ye me bhakta jana parato, na me bhaktas te janaha, mad bhaktananche ye bhaktas te me bhakta tamamata. He says, my dear son Aprita, the one who is my devotee is not my devotee, but the devotee of my devotee is my devotee. So you need to find a devotee, a Krishna conscious spiritual master that you can devote your life to. That this is my Guru Maharaj, and now he's my authority, and now I do whatever he says. You see, this person purely represents God, and I give my life to him as his disciple. That's a very important step that everyone has to make. In fact, Rupa Goswami, whose Prabhupada has given us the Nectar of Devotion, which is a summary study of Rupa Goswami's most important writing called the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. In this book, Rupa Goswami emphasizes three things, especially as the items of bhakti, very much emphasizes you have to take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master, you have to get initiated by a bona fide spiritual master, and you have to follow the instructions of the spiritual master. So if you will do these three things, take shelter of guru, get initiated by a guru, and then follow his instructions very carefully, then you'll make steady, steady progress on the pathway back to Godhead. And then the next stage after accepting a guru is what you wrote here, give up the wrong things. You need a guru to empower you to do that. The stage of giving up wrong things is called anartana vritti. That's the stage that comes after accepting a spiritual master. You can't really clean all the dirt out of your heart until you have the help of a spiritual master. You need, just like if you're really sick, you have to go to a doctor. You try to figure it out on your own. You try this, you try that, but you remain sick. If you go to an expert physician, he immediately gives you the medicine and you get well. So we're spiritually sick. We need a doctor. We need a guru, you see. So when you have a spiritual master, he's an expert person who can cure you of your disease. Bhava Rog, the repetition of birth and death is a disease. Bhava Rog. So you follow the directions of the spiritual master, and wow, you start to get better. You feel a difference once you get initiated and you follow his instructions. You feel a tremendous difference in your life, you see. Yes, question then. All you have to do is to sincerely want one, and then Krishna will send him to you.
That's what I was about to ask.
Just like I have many disciples all over the world, and you could ask them, well, how did you come to accept Sankarshan Das Adhikari as your spiritual master? And they'll tell you, well, they can explain to you how it just happened by Krishna's arrangement. It's simply a matter of coming to the point of sincerity, that I'm really sincere. Now I sincerely want to become a pure devotee of God. When that sincerity is there, then you'll realize this is my guru. You see, Krishna will tell you in the heart, here he is. You're listening to him right now. You see, when you're ready. If you're not ready, you won't see that's your spiritual master. You'll think, well, he's giving his opinion. Everybody has their opinion. He's giving his opinion. But a bona fide spiritual master doesn't give his opinion. He simply repeats the words of Krishna. He never gives his own opinion. He simply repeats the verdict of Krishna as passed down through the previous acharyas. This is described in the Bhagavad Gita. Evam param param praptam amam rajarshayo vidu Sakaleneha Mahata Yoga Nashta Parantapa. This supreme science was thus received through the chain of disciplic succession. And the saintly kings understood it in that way. So this knowledge is coming from Krishna. Krishna imparted it to Lord Brahma, who imparted it to Narad Muni, who imparted it to Srila Vyasadeva, who imparted it to Madhvacharya. In this way it's come down to Srila Prabhupada, and now I'm passing the same message on when I give teachings. You see, I'm just passing on what Prabhupada gave to me.
So in between that process of finding the guru and at this stage, what should we do in this?
What is she saying?
She says finding the guru and getting the guru and then following his instructions, in between, what should we do?
What should you do in order to do that? While you're looking for a guru, you should read Prabhupada's books and follow Prabhupada's books. Prabhupada is guru for all of us, you see. You read Prabhupada's books and follow Prabhupada's books. And by doing that very sincerely, then Krishna will reveal to you who is your spiritual master. Who is that person who is going to connect you with Prabhupada's teachings in a very practical way, you see. The spiritual master, he represents the previous spiritual master perfectly. The previous spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada. So the spiritual master means that person who can perfectly connect you with Srila Prabhupada's teachings. Who can show you how to become a perfect follower of what's in these books. That's how you judge. So you need to really know, you got to study the books. Have you studied all these books very carefully? Yeah. So you have to study very carefully and then pray to Krishna. My dear Lord, I need a spiritual master. Please reveal to me who is my spiritual master. Beg Krishna to help you. And if you're sincere about it, he'll definitely answer your prayer. But if you're not ready yet, he won't do it. If you just sang it on the lip, but you don't really mean it, it won't be revealed. But if you really mean it and you really desire it, then Krishna will say, this is your spiritual master. And make it very clear. Now you have found your spiritual master.
My husband is equally in Krishna consciousness.
My husband is equally in Krishna consciousness.
He's what in it?
Equally.
Very good. Where is he? Oh, very good. Hare Krishna. Jai. Hare Krishna.
What do? We are still in our own world.
Mm-hmm.
in the same position, they want it, progress.
The next step is you have to, are you chanting 16 rounds regularly? No? Oh, that's the next step. Take shelter of these instructions of Srila Prabhupada. That's your first step. Strictly follow the four regular principles and chant 16 rounds regularly. That's the first step. Take shelter of Prabhupada's teaching, you see. Take shelter of Prabhupada as your instructing spiritual master, you see. First step, take shelter of Guru. That's Prabhupada, see. Your first step is to take shelter of Prabhupada's teachings sincerely. And then, Prabhupada, when you show Srila Prabhupada that you're seriously following his instructions, Srila Prabhupada will show you who you should take your initiation from. So all you have to do is take shelter of Prabhupada as your Siksha Guru, and then Prabhupada will show you who you should be your Diksha Guru. 16 rounds and the four regulative principles. Be serious about it. How many rounds are you chanting now?
Two.
Two? Okay. How many would you like to be chanting now, ideally? Tomorrow. Starting tomorrow, how many would you ideally like to be chanting each day?
I chant 16.
16? All right. Start 16 tomorrow then. That's my instruction. 16 tomorrow. There's no reason not to. Before you take your breakfast, finish your rounds. That's all. Get up early, and before you take your meal, finish 16 rounds, and you're in bliss the whole day. You feel Prabhupada's mercy showering on you like torrents of rain in the monsoon season. At every minute, you'll feel Prabhupada's mercy showering on you. I did 16 rounds, and the day's just begun. It's not that I struggle the whole day. But if you do 16 rounds in the morning and then your whole day, it'd be pure nectar, like living in the spiritual world at every minute. I tell you, you talk to different devotees. Talk to devotees who chant their rounds in the morning before they start the day. And talk to devotees who chant two rounds here, two rounds there. 11 o'clock the night, they're trying to finish four rounds. See the difference in the consciousness of those two devotees. You'll be surprised. You see, there's a big difference. Those devotees who put chanting more important than eating, who want to get their rounds before they even eat their breakfast, you see, those devotees are very fixed. And those who think, well, eating's pretty important, I have a big meal, and I'm a little tired, I'll take a nap, and chant a few rounds here, a few rounds, you see. Krishna should be first. Put Krishna first in your life, and then Krishna will put you first on his list for his mercy. That's a fact. You have to show Krishna that you are putting him first, and then he will bump you up in the top of the queue for his mercy. This is fact. It's reality. Krishna is a person. He sees you. He knows you better than you know yourself. And if you show him you really want to serve him, you really want to please him, you really want to love him, he can arrange everything. He controls the whole world. Melbourne's under his control. Australia's under his control. The whole planet Earth, the whole universe, everything's under his control. He can arrange, orchestrate everything to facilitate you and your happiness. If you just try to make him happy, he'll do everything to make you happy. Every aspect of your life, Krishna can easily control. Your wealth, your health, everything Krishna can easily adjust. He just wants to see that you're sincere to become his devotee. That's all he wants to see. If you show him that, he'll give you all facility. Okay. The written questions, yes.
She committed the 16 rounds. Husband is equally good. Is he committed also?
She said they were equally? Your wife says that you are equally progressing on the path of bhakti. Is that true? Not true. Huh?
He's saying you don't think so.
He doesn't think so.
The problem is just now we are trying.
Well, if you can't do 16 every day, do 15. You can't do 15, do 14. But at least you should do eight. Right now, you should at least do eight. Yeah. And then later on, next time, I'm bump you up to 16. 8 rounds. I'll be a little, catch you a little slow. But you know, when I started chanting, I went from 0 to 16 in one day. When I first started chanting Japa, the first day, 16, and never stopped. I mean, why waste time? Sometimes in ISKCON, they think, well, you got to go gradually. And somebody said, well, you know, I wanted to chant 16 rounds. They said, but no, you haven't been in the movement long enough to chant 16 rounds. Somebody told them, you're not supposed to chant it. You're too early to chant. Someone was told by a devotee who didn't really know how to train properly. He told someone, you're not supposed to chant 16 rounds yet because you haven't progressed to that level. Here was a person who was willing to chant 16, was told you should not do that. Can you imagine? So we have to be careful how we train our members. You know? And we have to be careful who does the training in our movement also. Sometimes people want to be trainers. They don't even know how to practice it yet, and they want to be a trainer. If you want to be a trainer, you have to be well trained up, first of all, to become a trainer. So you actually know what you're training. Okay? All right, next one here. If the goal of life is to go back to Krishna, then why do we send our kids to school and involve in the material world? Well, I can tell you, ideally, we shouldn't send our kids to public school. We should have our own Krishna conscious schools for the children. That's the only reason. It's an emergency measure, sending your kids to public school. And in fact, is homeschooling legal in Australia?
Yeah.
Yes. There is a couple in Boise, Idaho, the Gupta family. They decided not to send their kids to public school. The father was working. He had a good job with Hewlett Packard, you know, the computer company, printers and laptops, etc. So his wife said, okay, I will homeschool these children. And her son, Ravi, by the age 13, he entered the university. He went straight from homeschooling to the university at the age 13. He's the youngest. Can you imagine a 13-year-old boy going to the university? And he excelled in his university. He didn't go to any public schooling at all, completely homeschooled. He went to the university at age 13, and now he's a big PhD Sanskrit professor at a university in Florida. He's a big PhD Sanskrit professor, very prestigious position teaching Sanskrit in the university. And he never went to public school until he hit the university at age 13.
But that's not practical for every household to do homeschooling.
That's why we need to have a Krishna conscious school someday for our children here. The Christians have, we drove by a Christian school today on the road. I saw, they call it Christ the Priest School or something, isn't it? The Christians have schools for their children, so they don't have to go to public school. So someday we need to have that. That's something we really need for our children. It's very important. Until then, what can you do? You better just get rid of the television. Because the house should not be a place to watch Bugs, to become Bugs Bunny conscious and Roadrunner conscious. Some of the kids may get mad at me now. Some of them might be addicted already. I had a child become very angry at me. Because when I visited their home, I sat down on the couch in a certain spot. I didn't know what's going on. I sat down on the couch and the kid went into a fit. He started crying and screaming just because I sat down on the couch. I found out that was his spot he watched television from. So don't use the TV as a babysitter for your kids. Well, if I just sit and watch the TV and they won't bother me. No, your duty as a parent is to keep that kid with you 24 hours a day. You engage in Krishna consciousness, engage him in Krishna consciousness with you. That's your duty as a parent. You be always engaged in bhakti, engage the children in doing bhakti with you. And those children will grow up to be great saints, I guarantee you. So if you have to send them to public school, then you need a very good program at home of spiritual support. where they feel they have shelter, that you're to be like a guru. The mother and father should both be like guru for the kids. Huh? Just for example, now these children are roaming around. Well, I see two good ones here. Who are the parents of these boys? Parents, raise a hand of these. Really? Very good. Congratulations to these parents. These children have been well trained. They sit and they hear, you see. But these children who are roaming around, that's good. She's here. Very good. Jai, Hari Bol. If you will keep these children with you and sit them in your laps and don't let them run around during the lecture time and the kirtan, after that they can run and play. No problem. But there should be a time when they sit and they hear with the adults, because how old was Prahlad when he heard the Srimad, the Vedic wisdom? How old was Bhakti Prahlad? He wasn't even born yet, and he was hearing it in the womb. You see? So if you let these children... When is the time when a child learn, when a human being learns the most, when they are most fertile for learning? The younger they are, the more fertile they are for learning. So if you inject these children, it's like these boys are being injected right now, you see. If you inject them when they're young, by letting them hear Krishna Katha, Bhagavad Gita, then these children will become very advanced. In fact, we saw a little 3-year-old boy. Now we see sometimes that they have the sloka classes, sloka things at Jamnastami. They'll teach the kiddies a whole chapter of the Gita and they'll stand up and recite it in front of everybody and everybody applauds. I'm not talking about that, because they don't retain them. They don't even know what the verses mean. So here they come. Welcome. We're talking about you and we're glad you've come. But don't sit together. Spread them with their parents. So they don't start playing with each other, you see. Let them all sit with their parents. Unless they're really well behaved, then it's okay. So anyway, this little 3-year-old boy whose name was Kirtan, his father brought him actually every day. We'd have a class every day. He would come for Bhagavatam every day before he'd go to school. He even got a permission from the teacher to be late for class because he was coming to a class at the church before school. So anyway, at the age of 3, he was quoting Bhagavad Gita verses to explain things that were happening to him. One time I was at a home program, and I went with him and his father to a home program, and the father, my disciple, was serving me. Making sure I had water to drink, and he was my servant during the lecture. And the son felt a little bit neglected. So Mataji happened to call up, and she asked him how he was doing. And what did he say? He said, Matrishvar, he says, it's a little difficult, but Matrishvar Shashtakonteya Shitoshna Sukaduka. That was it like that? Oh, Dukalayam Ashashvatam. A little 3-year-old boy, he wasn't quoting it like as a little performance of the Janmashtami. He was doing it to explain to Manaji what he was feeling like that at that moment and what he was going to do about it. He was quoting Sanskrit verses, and he never sat down to memorize them. Just by sitting in the class and hearing it, these children can learn these things. These children can learn much faster and much easier than we can. They have... A little child can learn 3 languages, can master 3 languages just by being in an atmosphere where they're spoken, you see. Yeah, a little child can be fluent in 3 languages just by being in an atmosphere where 3 languages are spoken. So if these children can sit and hear this philosophy, they'll become great sadhus. Every one of them, the little boys, the little girls, they'll all become great saintly devotees when they grow up. You just got to... Keep them absorbed. Every time you have a program, sit them down, let them hear the philosophy, and you'll be amazed. They'll lead you back to Godhead. Actually, they will. They can actually lead you back to Godhead. A putra means, son means one who delivers the parents from hell. You see? So a child who's well trained is the greatest asset for the parents. And the training they need is regularly hearing about Krishna. Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, regularly hearing, and chanting and kirtan. These things. Engage them in kirtan in your own home. You can come home. Every night you sit down, you can have a whole family sit down, read from Prabhupada's books, read Krishna stories. The children will love that, Krishna stories. And have a kirtan. And that you'll be amazed. You don't need television. All you need is Krishna book. Get out the Krishna book, read the stories, have a kirtan, and they'll dream about Krishna. You don't need all this mundane stuff. Not necessary. It poisons their brains. Okay. All right. Well, that answers that one. Next one. How did Yashoda know to name him Krishna? Did she name him Krishna? I don't remember the past time. Huh? Gargamuni. I don't remember the details of it, but the name Krishna has hundreds and thousands and millions of names. The name Krishna means the all-attractive one. So the name Krishna simply describes him. It's the best word for describing him. That's all. How come Krishna can see us and why we can't see him? Why did he do that? Okay. Actually, you can see Krishna. Krishna can see us, that's a fact. And you can also see Krishna. You simply have to purify your eyes. This is described in the Brahma Samhita. Premanjana chodito bhakti velochanena santaksa daiva hridayeshu velokayanti yangshamashundaramachityaganasvarupam govindamadipurusham tamaham vajami. When one anoints his eyes with the salve of love of God, then he can see Krishna everywhere within and without. So, Krishna wants to reveal himself to you. But you have to qualify yourself, that's all, by developing pure love for God. Hare Krishna. When we are in real pain, sometimes it's really hard to remember Krishna. At that time, all we remember is pain. So how do we practically apply Krishna consciousness at that time? Actually, when you're in pain, that's an excellent time to call out to Krishna. Just like that famous elephant, Gajendra. He was in the water being attacked by a crocodile. Now normally, an elephant can defeat a crocodile. But he happened to be in the water, which was the crocodile's environment. And therefore the elephant was facing death from the crocodile. But it just so happened that elephant had been a devotee in his previous lifetime, and he remembered a prayer that he had uttered in a previous lifetime, and he called that prayer out, and Krishna saved him. So when there is great pain, that's when we should take shelter of Krishna. We shouldn't say, "My dear Krishna, why are you putting me in this pain?" That we should not say. "Don't you realize I'm your devotee? Why are you causing me this pain?" No, we should not think. We should think, "I deserve this pain because of my past sinful activities. And now Krishna is very kindly minimizing that pain." There's a very nice prayer describing how to deal with pain and anxiety and suffering. This is given in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Tate nukampam susamikshavano punjanna evatmakritang vapakam tadvagvapurvirvidadang namaste jiveta yomukti pade sadaya bhak. My dear Lord, those devotees who are constantly awaiting your causeless mercy to be bestowed upon them, who continue to suffer the pain and anxiety due to them from their previous sinful activities, while constantly offering you respectful obeisances from within the cores of their hearts, are certainly eligible candidates for liberation. Indeed, it has become their rightful claim. So one who is intelligent in spiritual knowledge knows how to take advantage of pain, how to take advantage of distress, how to take advantage of difficult situations, not become overwhelmed by them. He thinks, well, this is something I deserve because of my past sinful activities. Now let me always be grateful to Krishna for giving even this difficulty. Let me be grateful for this pain that's come to me, because I'm burning off my past karma by suffering this pain right now. Thank you, Krishna, for blessing me with this burning off of my previous sin. And as soon as you're in that mood, that even pain becomes, you're even thankful for the pain, then that means you can never be in anxiety ever again about anything. And that means your auspicious life of pure bhakti is now beginning. As the verse says, that liberation is already in their hands. It's their rightful claim. They already have their ticket back to home, back to Godhead. So that's how to deal with pain. In fact, Kunti Devi, the great lady devotee, she prays very nicely in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Vipada shanta tat 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 jagan guru bhavanam darshanam yat syada punabhavra darshanam. She says, let that pain come more and more and more and more and more. Because ever I'm in pain, then I have nothing to do except take shelter of Krishna. And when I take shelter of Krishna, that means I will no longer see the repetition of birth and death. So she was begging for more difficulty. She was begging for distress. Krishna, you know, she went through so many years with her sons in the forest, 13 years in exile. Can you imagine a lady who's accustomed to living in a royal palace? Now she's living in the forest where there's man-eating rakshasas and all kinds of dangers. Not even a bed to sleep on at night. How would you like it if you had to live in the forest? You didn't have a bed. There was no heat. There was no air conditioning. And there's man-eating rakshasas. Would you like to go live in the forest for 13 years like that? A very hellish nightmare for her to be in that situation. But when it was all over, she was saying, Krishna, actually, please give me more difficulties like that. Because when those difficulties are there, then I can do nothing but remember you. So a devotee actually knows how to capitalize on pain and take it as the greatest blessing. I am a school teacher. It really worries me how many of my students have not been to church, temple, etc. Our future generations will not be God conscious. How we as devotees can spread God consciousness? Well, the two best formulas for spreading it are to do the Harinam Sankirtan in the public and distribute these books. These are the two most powerful things. And then prasadam is the third thing. Wide-scale prasad distribution. So this is very nice. You have this sentiment. It's very good. Now see what you can do to help this Sankirtan movement go forward. If you can't personally do, then at least you can give financial help to those who are doing it. By regularly supporting the temple, by regularly supporting the traveling preachers, you see. If you can't personally do, then you give a portion of your income to those who are doing that work directly. And that way you'll get the same benefit. How come we have a master? Actually, by our very nature, we require a master. In India, we see the dogs that don't have masters. They are the street dog. They are in a plurable state. How many of you have seen the Indian street dogs? Anyone has seen an Indian street dog? Oh, it's horrible. You feel so sorry for those poor creatures. How much they are suffering, you see. How many of you have seen the dogs in India that have masters? I've seen them on Juhu Beach. The wealthy businessmen, they go on their morning walk with their big, stout, sturdy dog, you see. The dogs are very jolly dogs. They're stout, strong, and jolly. not these lean, thin, and paranoid street dogs. You see. Actually, our very nature is we require a master. That is our nature. Just as a dog requires a master. Without a master, he's in a helpless, horrible condition. A dog requires a master, so we also require a master. And that original master is God. And that person who represents God, that is the spiritual master. So our very nature is we require a master. You understand? We require a master by our very nature. And if we don't have a master, we're in a very, very difficult position. Okay. Did Yashoda wish to have a baby named Krishna? Well, in a previous lifetime, they did desire that they could have... What is that story? They wanted to have... What were their names in previous lifetime? I'm forgetting them. Huh? Oh, Devaki and Vasudeva. They certainly desire... They had some special qualification and special desire which qualified them to have Krishna as their son. That's a thing. Why do we suffer all the time? The reason that we suffer all the time is due to ignorance. Actually, it is not the external situation that is the cause of our suffering. It is due to our lack of Krishna consciousness that we are suffering. Two people can be in exactly the same material circumstances, the same amount of money, the same amount of health, every material circumstance exactly the same. One person can be completely ecstatic and the other completely miserable. With the same amount of money, the same amount of prestige, the same amount of health, everything the same materially. The difference is the one person is Krishna conscious and the other is a greedy, selfish person who just wants to serve himself. We are not meant to be selfish. We are meant to be selfless servants of the Supreme. So the only thing that stands you in between you and unlimited happiness is to get rid of your selfishness and become selfless. That's all. It simply boils down to becoming a pure, selfless servant of God. You don't need more money, you don't need more prestige, you don't need a bigger house, you don't need any changes externally. All you need is an internal change. You have to get rid of the selfishness and become completely selfless. You know the difference between being selfish and selfless? I'll tell you. A selfish person only thinks about themselves. They only think about how to make themselves happy. They don't think about making somebody else happy, you see. That's called selfish. But a selfless person, he always thinks, how can I please others? And especially the selfless person always thinks, how can I please God? Do you know there is God? God means that person who is the source of everything. He is the source of everything. His name is Krishna or Rama. You see, there's the Supreme God. And if we can learn to love him, you ever seen a tree in the yard? You know what a tree is? You know all those leaves and branches? You know how to water the leaves and branches? You know how to do that? You water the root of the tree. The root is what's down there in the ground. When you water the root of the tree, then all the leaves and, you know this? All the leaves and branches are nourished. Or I'll give you a better example you can understand. When you eat, do you know every part of your body requires nutrition? Your nose requires nutrition, your ear, every part of your body requires nutrition. So when you eat, do you put the rice in your ear? You put the rice in your ear? You do? No, you don't. So when you eat, you put the rice in the mouth, you see. And then it goes to your belly, and then your belly then will take the nutritional value of that rice and it will distribute it throughout your entire body. So God is like the belly. When you give your loving service to Krishna or God, then that loving service goes to everyone and everything throughout the whole existence. It goes to your mommy, your daddy, your brother, your sister, your grandma, your aunts, your next door neighbors. It even goes to the ant in your backyard. Not your aunt, but the aunt in the backyard also gets your love, you see. When you give your love to God, then your love becomes universal love. It is distributed to all living entities throughout the whole universe. And when you achieve that platform of universal love, then you feel so happy. These children are not well trained, you see. Now they're up and running again. They couldn't handle them. They haven't developed a taste. They have to be learned to develop a taste. This girl is doing really good. She's got a taste. She's still sitting here. This boy, my congratulations to these children who are still here. They're doing very good. These kids are special kids. The ones who got up, they need more training. They need more training. Okay, so any more questions? Let's see. Maybe our time is, it's 9:30 and we have to get up for Mangal Arati. Any last question? One last question. Okay.
You said that there was a celebrated theorist who says that world came out of nothing. There's this friend of mine who's a physicist. He says that we were talking about it and he doesn't believe in God. He says there's no God. So I was telling him, how does the world come into existence? He says everything goes back to one or the other law of physics. So let's say everything is from law of physics.
That's what he asked?
He asked me, so I couldn't answer that. I was like, God was always there. So he said, well, the laws of physics were always there. So how do I give him that answer, that how did God come in existence? I mean,
yes, God means that the source of all existence, that is the meaning of God. So there is no, if God came into existence from somewhere else, and that's something else is somewhere else, that is, if God came into existence from somewhere else, then that is not God. God means the original source of existence, by definition. And if he says, then where did God come from? Well, if God came from somewhere else, then he's not God. God means the original source of existence, by definition.
Exactly. So God, I believe, I have that faith that God was always there, and he's the...
No, it's not a matter of faith. It's just a matter of language. God means, the concept of God means the cause of all causes, the original source of existence. By definition, that's the definition of the word God. So to say where did God come from is an irrelevant question. It doesn't make sense in terms of the English language, because God means the source of all existence, by definition. And he says, well, I don't believe there's a God. And then he has to say that everything came out of nowhere, came out of nothing. Either everything came out of something or it came out of nothing. It's one of the two. So the atheist scientist, he says it came out of nothing. But where's the scientific evidence? Where's the scientific experiment that in any time, in any laboratory, that they ever took something out of nothing? It's never been done. It's never been shown, but we can show thousands and millions of scientific experiments where something was derived from something. We can never show a scientific experiment where something came out of nothing. So the two concepts that everything came from something or everything came from nothing is not scientific. Everything came from something is scientific. And the original something from which everything came, you can call it whatever you want. You can call it the source. You can call it the source, you can call it the origin, or you can also use the word God. It's another word which is used to describe that source of existence.
So if you call it source, you don't call it God.
Yeah, just tell him if he doesn't like the word God, just say, well, there's a source of all existence. That's
why,
all.
Why do we have to pray to that source?
Well, that's a whole other issue. Don't let them. If you're talking with a scientist like that, you don't let him bounce you to another issue. You find where he's weak and you keep hammering on that point until he finally bows down. You don't let him change the subject. As soon as they get in a weak corner, they try to push change the subject. You keep him on the point that there is original source for existence. And to understand the source of existence, that is the perfection of human knowledge. Now, whether you call it God or you call it the origin of the source, That's not a big deal. We're not hung up on the word God. You can call it the source of existence. There is an original source of existence. And the to understand that source of existence, that is the goal of the human life. Now I'll give you an example. All right, we can understand there's an origin for existence, a source for existence. Okay. Now, if you have a gold mine, from a gold mine you can extract gold, right? Out of a gold mine you can get gold. Now, if I told you that I have a gold mine that we extract gold from, but it doesn't have any gold in it, would you believe me? No, the gold mine must have gold, otherwise you can't extract gold from it. So many persons are coming out of the original source of existence. I'm a person, you're a person, so many persons here in this room tonight, so many persons in Melbourne, so many persons in Australia, so many persons all over the world, we're all coming from that original source of existence. So therefore, just as gold cannot come from a goldless gold mine, persons cannot come from an impersonal source of existence. Therefore, that original source of existence must possess personality, and if it possesses personality, it must be a person, because impersons do not possess personality, only persons possess personality. So now, through pure logic, through pure scientific logic and philosophy, we have proven that there is a person who is the source of existence. And we traditionally, that is known as God. But we're not hung up on that word. We can leave that word out of the conversation if it agitates their mind. We can talk philosophy with them. There is a person who is the original source of existence. The next question is, well, why did he do all this? Why did he manifest this from himself? And the answer is to expand his enjoyment. To have loving relationships with each and every one of these expanded living beings that he's emanated from himself. That's why we are here, to have a loving relationship with that original person. So we haven't even quoted scripture yet. We have simply used logic and philosophy to establish a personal God with whom we should have a loving relationship. So in this way, these scientists can all be enlightened. Another good argument given by Prabhupada is this. Every machine has an operator. Every machine requires an operator. So therefore, Prabhupada said, I can guess that the gigantic machine, the universal machine, must have a gigantic operator. You see, the cosmic machine must have a great operator. So that's another argument. We have all the logical arguments on our side. They don't have the logical arguments. Because their philosophy is absurd. That everything came out of nothing. Atheism is basically saying everything came out of nothing. It's absurd. No scientist has ever been able to make such an experiment to get anything out of nothing. How many of you people here have made popcorn? How many of you have popped popcorn? Very good. Did you get it out of an empty pot? Or were there kernels and oil there in the pot? No. There were kernels and oil in that pot. That's how you get the popcorn. You don't get a popcorn out of an empty pot. So these scientists, these atheists, they want us to believe you can get a popcorn out of an empty pot. It's ridiculous. You think I'm such a fool to think that I can get popcorn out of an empty pot? That's what the atheists and the scientists now want us to believe. So who's dogmatic? Are the theists dogmatic or the atheists being dogmatic? They are being dogmatic. We are being logical and intelligent. They are being foolish and dogmatic. So therefore, I don't accept such... Well, keep working on him, you know. Keep working on him. Huh? Yeah, I'll give you my card. You can give him, put it, see if he's willing to check out my free e-course here. Let's see, where's my cards? I got some here. Yeah, come get my card. You hand this card there. You can give this to him. Tell him to sign up for my course, my e-course. Okay, I guess we'll stop here. And because it is getting late, and we have to get up early in the morning before the sunrise, chant Hare Krishna. I don't want to stay up too late tonight. But I especially want to just thank these children who came forward and sat here so nicely, especially these little girls, this little boy, and these, all of them here. All these kids who have stayed here the whole time. Really want to thank them for coming forward. That's very good, very good. Okay, so we'll stop here. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.